Welcome to Dr. Fred Bell's Health, Science, and Energy Show. And we're looking forward to having a great time tomorrow night with Tom Kenyon, one of the first guests that, since Dave Gibson came on, that will be appearing at the May 11th and 12th Festival of Sound in San Francisco, where people from all over the world, including the famous Dr. Emoto, will be there. So anyway, today we're going to continue on with the No Charge Health Science and Energy Seminar from 1992, which is available free through the archives of bbsradio.com. So Dr. Bell, are you there? Are you starting now? Where are you? There he is. Here comes Dr. Bell. Who's hiding there?
Quartz kingdom should have never been mined on this planet. Normally what happens is minerals are mined on other worlds when they're needed on a home world. Pleiadians don't mine their home worlds, for example. But Earth man, being greedy, has been mining this planet for a long time. When the Atlanteans, during Atlantean time, were using the quartz crystals for record keepers and monitors and amplifiers, they weren't physically bringing them out of the ground. They were able to access them right into the ground, wherever they were located. That was the beauty of the Atlantean technology. Quartz kingdom, of course, is the home body or home base of the Akashic records. And so that means that the crystals are always growing. As a matter of fact, crystal grows at a tenth of 1% of its weight every 10 years. And of course, because human experience is enhancing itself and increasing, people are having more and more experiences all the time, this creates a residual energy which causes the quartz kingdom to grow because it's a receiver for that energy. All the different mineral kingdoms have something to do with the human kingdom. The emerald, for example, has to do, you know, quartz is silica dioxide. Emerald has a lot of chromium in it. Different gemstones have different forms of minerals in them, and of course you can correlate through that mineral what they actually do in human body. Because when the thought process is activated in the body, for example, you're using trace minerals to amplify the parasympathetic nervous system, or you're using low-frequency minerals to activate the autonomic. There's a consciousness in that mineral that tells the body how to utilize that mineral. Remember, I've told you that many times that 5% of your body controls 95% of all metabolic function. So therefore, it's important to realize that your thoughts are somewhat regulated, or your body is somewhat regulated by your thoughts coming or emanating from the synapting of the minerals in the brain at over a given period of time. Now the minerals, of course, each vibrate at a certain frequency. That frequency is amplified in the brain, sent out, transmitted over the aura field. The aura field then responds down into the endocrine system. The endocrine system responds from the minerals, digesting or secreting hormones or digesting other kinds of foods, for example, in the stomach, the breakdown of food through the large and small intestine. All these things are also key to the mineral frequency. It's a whole interrelation of different kinds of things going on, that if you follow that interrelationship clear out into the external world, the internal world within your own biosystem becomes greatly enhanced. Now, collecting quartz is real interesting. We use the giant master crystal as a kind of like a protector, because it will store and lock into all the crystals in your possessions. When you get into something like one of our fire star orbs, what happens is you start to take all of your crystals and combine them, physically locate them somewhere where they can all start feeding back from one another. We put fire stars in people's houses, and they would be automatic, with, especially with the Omnion in conjunction with it, and what they would end up doing is getting crystals from shelves and drawers and outside their house, and they'd been collecting for a year, and all of a sudden they put them all in place and start making them work. This is one of the things that happens when you work with this higher frequency. You start becoming aware of the mineral kingdom and how it interfaces with the rest of the systems. Now, I first got into, I didn't know all this about quartz, and I first got into quartz a long time ago when we first had created the radiators, and I was learning how to ground them. I knew Semyazi had told me about putting minerals in the bottom of them, but I didn't really understand what it was all about in those days. I still don't quite, but I mean, I know more than I did then. And so a friend of mine had sold me this master crystal, which weighed about 80 pounds. This is back about 15 years ago. He was a medical doctor. He was dying of cancer at the time, and he was basically giving me this crystal. His name was Dr. Harvey, and I didn't really know that he was giving me this thing. You know, I didn't even know he had cancer at the time. He knew. So $80 was a steal for a crystal worth several thousands of dollars. So I brought this big 80-pound or 75-pound crystal home, set it in the middle of my living room. I looked at it for a few days, and I said, well, wow, I mean, it's a nice crystal, but what am I supposed to do with it? And so then my friend Ron came down from up north, and his picture's in some of our catalogs. Ron Spencer, he was one of the few people that used and bought systems from us, and knew how to place them in his own clinics and that better than I could have done it. First time he bought a system from me, we were living up, he was living up in Applegate Valley next door to Richard Bach up there. He had bought a huge amount of equipment from a seminar and put them all in his clinic. So the next day I figured, well, I've got to go down and work an entire day to hook up all of this equipment that Ron bought from me and show him how to use it, because he had a large amount of biofeedback equipment that he wanted. He brought it from Japan and Europe, and he wanted to coordinate with it. So the next day I got up bright and early, started over to his clinic to hook all the stuff up, prepared for a good hard day's work. And to my surprise, when I walked in, he'd been there the night before and had set everything in place, not only perfectly, but more perfectly, and he was showing me how to use my stuff. So I thought that was kind of neat. Other people were as crazy as I was, or maybe crazier. So anyway, he came down to my house one day, several months after that incident, where he bought the equipment. He saw that crystal sitting there, and he must have picked up on the fact that I didn't know what it was. And so he says, Fred, I'll give you $500 for that piece of quartz over there. And I says, wow. I think that's a lot of money. My little greedy brain sat down and thought, well, that's a $420 profit. How can I lose on this deal? I said, sure, take it. So he wrote me on a check for $500 and took off for Applegate Valley with my big crystal, which I didn't think I needed anymore. After about a week went by, I started noticing the house had some kind of emptiness that it didn't have before. And something seemed to be missing, and I couldn't put a finger on what it was. And finally, after about 3 weeks of this, every time I'd walk in the living room where this crystal was, feeling this depression, I began to realize that the crystal had something to do with me, who knows from what and when at that time, and that it belonged there. So by about the time the sixth week went by, I started to think I really needed my crystal back to see what was wrong here. About this time during the sixth week, Ron called me up and says, hey, Fred, I'm going to Hawaii. He says, would you be interested in buying your crystal back? And I says, Ron, I says, bring me that crystal right away. I'm more than interested. I says, you played a trick on me. You were trying to teach me something. He just laughed. So he says, not only I won't ship this crystal to you, but he says, I'll bring it to you because I'm on my way to have to go out to LAX from Oregon anyway to get over to Hawaii. So he flew down from Oregon with my crystal, and when he brought it up to the living room, I had five $100 bills sitting on the dining room counter out there just for that crystal to get back in my possession. I haven't let it go since. That lesson taught me that once you get your master crystal, you keep a hold of that thing. In Arkansas, I should have guessed anyway, because I started going down there. You go into a crystal store or a shop, and there's always one crystal there that's one of the nicer ones usually. Not always, but it's just not for sale. You ask the people, how much do you want for that crystal? They're going to say, we don't have that crystal for sale. And you can offer them any amount of money. And they may look poor, but they won't sell that crystal. And these are simple folks that just know about crystal. So then I programmed my crystal. I learned how to program it. And when I learned how to program it, I programmed it to get more crystal. And as a result, I started attracting more and more crystal around the crystal that I've got now. Now, also in the process of programming it, I began to collect it. I began to learn that different crystals have different vibratory frequencies, and in working with our Pleiadian and extraterrestrial systems, they all have a place. Sometimes you have to use your imagination a bit at first and your intuition to find out where they go, and if you miss it, miss the positioning of where this crystal goes, you're going to notice it. We have a lady by the name of Mrs. Terry over in Hawaii that does spiritual channeling for crystals, and she goes out to people's houses sometimes worldwide and helps them place their crystals. And sometimes remove crystals. Sometimes you have crystals that you shouldn't have. They're not tuned to you. And they work against the other crystal. The Mac Earl was a interesting group of crystals that we got into our collection and started working with. It's probably the finest crystal that was ever mined off the surface of the planet. And the fact that there was only about 6,000 or 7,000 pounds of it ever found. And it was the clearest stuff you've ever seen. I mean, we use it in our laser show, and it shoots light through the crystal and it turns into a perfect rainbow. The crystal is very high in vibratory frequency, and all of the Arkansas crystal is polarized to the right, meaning that if you pulled a cork out of your bathtub and watched the water go down, the water would turn to the right, it would go clockwise, north of the equator. If you were south of the equator and you pulled the plug out of your bathtub, it would go counterclockwise. South American crystal, which comes from south of the equator, is polarized in the opposite direction. Arkansas crystal has a tendency to be more in the healing vibration. South American crystal has a tendency more to be in the extraterrestrial and communications vibrations. But the two work together. And we use huge amounts of Arkansas crystal in our systems because it has a tremendous grounding healing effect. And small amounts of South American crystal because it has an amplifying raising effect. And so we use the two types of crystal. Plus we use a lot of amethyst, which comes from South America and up here. Amethyst, of course, is the seventh ray material because it's violet, and the quartz is the first, second, and third ray material, depending on what kind of quartz it is. And so you end up working with four rays simultaneously when you work with amethyst and quartz. Now, when we start adding all the other materials that are available, we start fine-tuning our systems, like in the case of a system three or quad system. Yeah, for sources of activating the megorbs in the quad system or the systems three, we find that the amount of material that's available in a receptor, for example, is usually adequate to modulate a particular frequency that's necessary to create and build up a scalar wave of the pitch of that type of octave. Of course, we also use the sound with it. So what I recommend is that, first of all, you get a large master crystal and realize it takes some time when you select your master crystal. We always have a selection of them here. Master crystals are also becoming an investment now, too. We sold one to a temple over in Hawaii, on Kauai, the Garden Island. I think I sold that crystal to him for around $35,000, which may seem like a lot, but at the time it was a bit, but that's what that crystal was worth. It was 700 pounds, and the Buddha that ran the temple over there had seen it in a vision, and he wanted it for his temple. Since then, they've built a temple around this crystal, and and they've energized it with lasers like we taught them how to do, and it's been very successful. People come from all over the world to see it. On a materialistic value now, that crystal is worth well over $250,000.
I want to do an update here on the crystals. Since this was done, the Coleman mine went dry. I mean, that was the only crystal in the world that from around in the Coleman mine is north of the equator, which gives a clockwise spin. And actually, it's a counterclockwise spin. So with that energy going, the lattice structure forms a healing vibration that goes out to humans, whereas in South America, it's a opposite. It's more of a psychic energy. And so since then, the crystals have become a lot more valuable. The one that was valued at $250,000 from a value standpoint now is well worth millions of dollars. You can't find a 700-pound crystal anymore from the Coleman mine. They don't exist, and the mine just ran out. And there was only one mine in all of the northern hemisphere of the entire world that produced this type of crystal. Secondly, in our holographic systems, the way I describe the crystal now, it works differently than it did in the irradiator systems. It's more like a battery now. If you have a car and you don't have a battery in it, you have to push it to start it. Well, with the holographic projector systems, they work a lot smoother when you have a master crystal involved. So there are a whole new host of applications to the master crystal that I'll be posting up on the raysoftruth.tv website. So if you want to go there and ask questions, and they'll be answered once a month, we'll get much further into this epic of crystals, because it's gone to a whole new level now. So now we'll continue.
Quartz is that we're not finding that much big points anymore. It's starting to get mined out. So the people in later generations that want to have these big points for their systems, I would say they're going to have an awful hard time finding an original crystal because there just aren't going to be that many available anymore, especially the ones from Arkansas. But we do have a good selection of them from weights of, you know, a few pounds up to weights of a ton or so. But the average, what we call a large crystal now, maybe 200 or 300 pounds, we're not finding them in much anymore of any kind of clarity or substance over 300 pounds anymore. And the average person in a system, we recommend we'll go with a crystal somewhere between 50 and 175 pounds. That seems to be the average weight. Now, the other thing that we found is when you work with systems, any kind of a crystal that you bring in a point form, okay, over the weight of the master crystal, is going to be a conflict between the crystals. The crystals are also sex. They have male energies, female energies. The tabbies are the flat wedge types, are usually female energy crystals, and the male ones are usually the pointed ones. It was real interesting in my own collection that I had picked up a large tabby weighing about 45 or 50 pounds, brought it home from Arkansas. It was a gift, actually, from the miners. I had spotted it several years before I brought it home, and I kept talking to Ron. I said, someday, Ron, I'm going to buy that crystal from you because I like it, because it was an unusual crystal and I was attracted to it. And he said, someday I'm going to probably give you that crystal. Well, one day I had made a sale down there for him, and he says, Fred, I think I'm going to give you that crystal today. And I went over and took it and brought it home. Had it in my living room. I first brought it in the living room. I wasn't sure if it was going to work, it was going to fight my master crystal or not. So what I did is I placed it in the bedroom down the hall from where my master crystal was. So every day when I'd walk by, come upstairs to my living room, the master crystal was sitting in the living room, the center of it, and this tabby that I'd bought, this 40-pound tabby that I actually bought and been given to me, was sitting at the far end of the house, and you could see it down the hallway from the living room. And I felt this tremendous sexual energy between the two of them. It was real interesting. And other people noticed it, too. They said, there's something funny. I feel this funny feeling. So I finally realized that this was this other crystal. They both come from Arkansas, and this other crystal, they come from a different mine, and we oftentimes grade them by the mines, but we had to get beyond all this grading and valuing and weight system and realize that there was a male-female energy going on here. And so I decided, well, this crystal obviously is not disliking this other crystal. There's not a dislike there, because I had brought crystals in the house and brought them near my master crystal. It didn't seem to like them. It caused you to feel nervous when you're around it. Because whatever feeling you pick up when you're around it is usually the feeling coming out of that crystal, and it's keying on into your body systems, your bile systems through the minerals in your body. So I decided, well, this crystal likes this thing. So I brought this crystal from the bedroom and put it about 2 feet away in the living room around my master crystal, because I have a circle of crystals around it already that is attracted to small different points ranging from anywhere from maybe 5 pounds up to maybe 30 pounds that are surrounding that particular crystal already. So why, bringing a 50 pounder in there next to a crystal that only weighs 75, I had some reservation putting it in that close proximity. But I brought it in anyway and set it there, and it just seemed to really like that, and the rest of the crystals seemed to agree with it. Well, a few months later, I met this girl and was playing a concert over in Germany, in the Bavarian Alps, and it was a Firestar concert, and I was playing it, and that night was real interesting in the fact that we had about 500 people in this concert hall where we were playing the concert. I was using Pleiadian ship sounds and wraparound sounds with a D50, and all 500 people were energized on that chakra level. And what we found out was that suddenly we had a bunch of Pleiadian ships hovering overhead, and people were seeing them. And then the Swiss Air Force came up, started chasing them, actually the German Air Force. And then pretty soon the police came out and cordoned off the town of Marnau, the Bavarian Alps. So this was a real exciting evening. Well, in all this excitement, the hostess of the group, Franka Plog, had become familiar with me and I her, and we started kind of like being friends. To make a long story short, she ended up coming to America about a year later and becoming my wife. And one night right after we were married and we were sitting in the living room, we were talking about how to accumulate a master crystal, and she was asking me how she could get her master crystal. And I told her the story how I'd gotten mine. And it was a gift from a friend, and I tried to get rid of it, and it came back. I gave her the whole routine. And she started looking at that wedge, and she started sitting down next to that wedge crystal next to mine. And she says, Fred, you know what? And I says, yeah. I says, you've just found your master crystal, and it had attracted itself here even a year before that I knew you were coming. And she just said, I know this is my master crystal. She knew it, and I knew it at the same time. So that kind of cemented that. And so they come in the funniest ways. And here, not only did the crystal come before my wife, but the wife followed the crystal into the house. It was really a funny situation. And that's just the beginning of the magic of when you get into the use of quartz with the systems. And that's just, like I said, the very beginning, the tip of the iceberg. They're incredibly fun to play with, these systems, when you start to realize how they work. Now, besides the points, we use big clusters, small clusters. They're amplifiers. When you look in the systems catalogs, you'll see them. I always recommend somebody try to get hold of a really decent 40, 50, 60-pound cluster, because it tremendously it breaks up the intensity of the single point energy, dissipates it throughout the radiator system into all the subsystems that are involved with the crystals, which I'll get into here in a minute. So I highly recommend that this for most people. Now, when you start getting more than one irradiator, or two or three or four radiators, of course you'll have a megorb at the bottom of them, and the quartz is placed in each irradiator. We usually use a small, assuming now that you have your master crystal somewhere, and then you put your two small, say 3 or 4 or 5 pound points in each of the two chambers that it shows you in the diagrams in the different magazines and books that we published, how to locate them in there in the megorbs. Then you put a plastic plate underneath the whole entire system, because the system is now grounded through the quartz itself to the ground, but physically you don't want it touching the ground. You get it up on a plastic plate or a big thick carpet. Now, if you're going to use a power supply, not you want it on a plastic plate. Then you go outside your house and find two local stones. In the case where we live here in Laguna Beach, we live on top of a lot of natural quartz here and gold. We live right on top of gold mines. We actually found gold when a tree blew over. We found some nuggets that assayed out at 3 ounces per ton, which is kind of interesting. So we use a couple of those pieces to represent the local elementals. So you have the quartz kingdom with the Akashic records cueing into the human mind and human aura fields and human consciousness, planet-wide, stellar-wise even, and keying that into the local area by your house. You have the local stones and use a couple of those in your crystal. And that's the nice thing about cost-wise, those are usually free. Then what you do is you position the unit. If you're using a single radiator, you would position it at the foot of your bed. And if you're using more than them, more than one radiator, you would align the bottoms of them to magnetic north. And if you're using four of them, you would put them in a large square, each one of the bottoms aligned to north, two in and two out. Radiators pointing towards the center, two radiators pointing outside. Now, I want to bring up at this point in time, if you're working with a single radiator and a megorb and some quartz, and you don't have a master crystal, don't be afraid to start working with a system without one. Just program the system for one, and eventually one will come. When it comes, the system will make a lot more sense. It'll be a lot more grounded. The second thing that's real important when you're starting out with one of our systems is to get into a star orb. If you look at the construction of a star orb, they're not very expensive, by the way. Some of these things cost hardly anything. The star orb is a series of pyramids, 6 pyramids, and they're all facing each other with ground. These ground wires all cancel out the energies coming into the star orb to one point. And that one point, of course, has a long wire going off the unit. And you take the wire and you hook it to a radiator pipe, or you run it outside your window, run it down the side of your house or your apartment into the ground, and put a stake in the ground and stake it down real good, because any time you play with the scalar wave type energies, you're going to attract some negative energy or opposite force. And the opposite force just has to be directed back into the earth, and the earth will clean it up and make it a harmonious force. That's what the earth is here for. It's called grounding it. So grounding it is very important. We first started working with a star orb. We found that, I think I mentioned this earlier, Jack Alpin up in Los Angeles put one up in his clinic, and they found that it attracted the negative energy out of people. He had a dental clinic. And what happened was people walk into his clinic and they would no longer have apprehension, so he had to use a lot less painkillers. And it's great if you take the star orb and put a plant in it. Plants grow real well inside of them too. So it makes a very attractive device if you don't want to tell people what you're really doing with it. They're also very good for getting rid of the side effects of ELF, that's extremely low frequency, and other forms of 60 cycle radiation. Now, if you have a great big giant power pole right outside your house, remember I talked about that earlier when I got into the book Biological Effects on Human Being of Extremely Low Frequencies, which I quoted in the earlier part of the tape series. We have a thing called a Devastar, which is a large version of this. We use it normally in high-rise buildings, but the Devastar is excellent also to use in your room to ground out any extreme heavy negative energies coming in. Some people report they have problems with negative spirits coming in. Mischievous nature spirits. Spirits that are hung in limbo between the physical plane and the astral plane. And we find that these devices are real helpful to rid these problems too and free the spirit up to go on and do its work. Once again, when you're doing this, be sure it's grounded. And of course, we integrate the use of the laser also. One other thing that I want to touch on here basically again is the large pyramids over the bed. Now, I've got an 8-foot or 9-foot pyramid over my queen-size bed, but you can use an 8-foot. We have a 10-foot size pyramid for the king-size bed, and we have a 6-foot pyramid for the smaller beds. And we found that when WLW went on the air with the Voice of Cincinnati, they put out a lot of radiation and destroyed the crops and vegetables within a 5-mile radius of the transmitter back in 1929. The FCC regulated on them, and they set up, this is the first time that the FCC regulated the transmitting tower, and they cut their power down to 50,000 watts, which it is today. And most stations are in that 50,000 power watt region. So we found that pyramid power 5, that remember I mentioned this earlier about growing shrimp eggs, inside a pyramid they live a lot longer. Well, in the systems it's necessary to keep the energy proper and balanced. And so by putting a pyramid over your bed, the pyramid will tune itself into the system because we're all working with pyramid shapes. And for example, if you're using a single radiator, and the radiator is projecting energy, like say from a book or a tape or something, into your aura field at night while you sleep, and your body's on the astral plane, because the second stage of sleep is the astral plane, then what happens is it will allow the assimilation of this energy to take place on a much more concurring, much more concurrently. The thing about sleeping in a pyramid is a lot of people complain at first that they jump around in there. I mean, for the first 2 or 3 months, they feel uncomfortable sometimes. They wake up in the middle of the morning, middle of the night rather, just wee hours in the morning, say, I can't sleep that well. Well, what happens is their body is being detoxified. And when their body is being detoxified, what happens is over a period of time, your body just has to get, it just becomes nervous. But after about 3 months of sleeping in a pyramid, you'll sleep very well in it. And then after that, you'll be spoiled in it. Because you're eliminating that jumping sensation that you get when your etheric body is coming out of your physical body 2 extra inches at night when you first lay down and go to sleep, charge off the Earth's magnetic field. And later on, when you go that in that 13-foot jump where rapid eye movement starts to occur, where your eyes start to flutter, and you move out in the astral plane to do your work there, the pyramid is really protective in that area. I think a good example of that is that my aura field was clear enough from sleeping in a pyramid maybe 15, 16 years like I have, so that when I was able to bring my master crystal in, it amplified my thoughts, and I was looking for someone that was harmonious to me that I would be attracted to. That brought in my wife's crystal, and then later on it brought her in. But she was looking for the same thing, but I think the pyramid, because a lot of this occurs during sleep, I think the pyramid was really acting as a very good focal point to make this happen. Now, the next thing that you probably noticed that we do is that we put lasers, we shine lasers onto the crystals. And when we shine lasers on the crystals, you get a whole different effect in our concerts, like the Firestar concert in Germany that had UFOs come, and many Firestar concerts that we've had where UFOs have come. We're always using many lasers, and the lasers are shooting their energy down into the quartz. Now what happens is, if you understand how a laser beam works, first of all, regardless of what the output color of the laser is, meaning the color of the beam coming out, the laser beam is created by the green energy of its pumping source. And so what that means is that inside a laser is a white light source, like a flash bulb that's continuously going off. This is called a xenon flash tube in most lasers. This flash tube would fire its white light energy down into a ruby rod if it was creating a red laser, or it might be firing a down into the gas type laser like a helium, a cadmium gas, which would create a blue laser light output, or it could be firing into an argon gas, which would create a green light out. But the bottom line is the same. Regardless of what color of laser tube this is white light pumping into, it's only absorbing the green energy of the spectrum. And of course, if you remember, green is the central frequency of hydrogen, and it's also the plant kingdom. So So therefore, it becomes very important to understand that the green is going to be absorbed, and it's a constant energy field. That means if you're pumping laser light into a crystal over a period of time, you're going to be working a lot with the center frequency of hydrogen. As a result of that, you're centering your hydrogen atoms in your body. So if you were one of these people that had a jet lag experience where you had to go from one continent to another, if you carried a laser with you in a small crystal, and when you got to your destination, projected the laser onto the crystal for a few hours and meditated with it, let that sphere of influence of that energy go into your body, it would definitely slow down the effects of jet lag because it restabilizes the hydrogen atom in the body. In the flying saucers, and the interstellar devices that the Pleiadians and the other different races produce, they have field generators in there that produce similar or the same effect, and they're oftentimes seen as laser lights from the outside that help stabilize the metabolism of the occupant when it's on his long deep space journey. Now, the interesting thing is how it stabilizes it is that, remember we talked about the hydrogen atom, you know, the energy coming in from the higher planes, and we went through the higher planes in meditation, and so the energy is coming in and spreading itself throughout the hydrogen atom in the form of the rainbow. Violet in the morning is at the electron of the outer level, and red is in the center, red is at the nucleus, the proton, and green is in the center. As the day goes by, this polarity changes across green, so when the sun goes down, the energy of the coming in from the other dimensions, which we've experienced each and every single ray, is now painting a violet picture on the nucleus of the proton, and it's painting a red picture on the electron. And of course, we've even gone deeper in the fact that we found out there were a couple of protons and neutrons, quarks and hadrons inside these particles, and we talked about other particles which were the essence of the light itself. So we begin to see that this interaction of light and consciousness has a dramatic effect on the hydrogen atom. Well, if you look at the laser now, how it works, the first thing that happens is the fact that the laser, when you first pump the tube with the white light, it's absorbing the green light. The proton-electron-proton-electron-proton-electron alignment inside the laser gas, the tube, or whatever the source of the light's going to be, you'd see that there's hydrogen atoms in there, hydrogen ions, and you're going to see that there's a proton, an electron, a proton, electron. And when this white light hits this proton-electron relationship, the electrons are pushed away from the proton. It's like taking a rubber band and pulling it, stretching it. The electrons are starting to be pulled away. They're being pumped by this green light, and they're being pulled away. Finally, you can only pull this rubber band so far, and it's going to snap back. So when it snaps back, absorbs all this green energy that it can't absorb anymore, it snaps back. And as it snaps back, it triggers or creates a little standing wave or shock wave down into its nucleus of energy and creates a photon of light right off the astral plane. So it extracts light from its nucleus, meaning that its energy was raised, and because energy is higher, it's attracted up on the next plane or consciousness. And we said the astral plane is self-illuminating, so naturally it's going to draw this self-illuminating light from within itself.
This seminar series is continued on the next tape.
Well, now we're getting more and more into this stuff. Also, I want to add here that the newer lasers that we're selling now, the solid-state lasers, work the same way. They just don't use a optical pumping frequency anymore, but they use a substrate layer that is pumped by electrons until it gives off a frequency, which then it reflects around between the junctions. So it's not a whole lot different, but it's obviously smaller. Same thing as laser out, and of course there's gas lasers, there's dye lasers, there's so many different types of lasers that it's hard to keep up with them all, but they all work the same, and they're very important. In my concerts, I think they were very important because when we hook them into music and modulate them to the music, it fulfills the circuit that the extraterrestrials seem to gravitate to rather quickly. And we've had pretty much success in all indoor and outdoor concerts of a major substance of having some kind of visitation. The outdoor ones, we've had some huge visitations, but the one that we did over in Marnau, Germany, was made the newspapers all over Germany, which was kind of interesting. So we're now continuing on the other side, and we'll go as far into this as we can, time permitting. And once again, catch our show on Saturday night with Tom Kenyon. And the next two shows after that, the following shows are also going to be just great.
Remember, all the seven levels are within themselves, as we've discussed earlier in meditation. So it's going to pull that out. It's going to send this down, this little tube. So here comes this photon off the astral plane, having been pumped by the green energy of white light on the physical plane. So the photon rushes down to the tube and hits the end of the tube, and it's got a little mirror down there with a 5x coating surface. It is then reversed off that mirror and reflected like light is off a normal mirror down to the other end of the tube. It goes rushing down to the other tube and hits another mirror, which has got a 10x coating surface on it. So then that reflects it back to the 5x, and it goes back and forth coherently. And after a few seconds, it builds up enough energy to go right through the mirror. So it goes blasting through the mirror, and you see this little white beam of green or orange or red light, depending on what color laser that you have. Okay, now what we do then with that energy is an astral source. This is a direct energy coming off the astral plane. We merely direct that energy now directly onto a target that's astral responsive. In this case, why not trigger the Akashic records on the astral levels and amplify that through the columns of the radiators? So that's and create it into scalar energy. So that's exactly what happens. The energy strikes a piece of crystal. The crystal is inside the base of an irradiator and the megorb. The crystal lasers off of the light that you can see that just penetrates right through you if you do it in a dark room. That activates the nature spirits, brings everything into alignment, and brings all the energies of the earth and the inner dimensions into perfect alignment, sends them right up the radiator column. And the radiator column, of course, is directed at you. And depending on what you've got in the radiator column, whether it be a book or whatever, it's activated into that same energy. And it's the same thing as what we call the Hieronymus effect. Except now we're not using that. We're not feeding a poison in to kill insects. We're feeding in a healing consciousness to raise consciousness and directing it somewhere. So out of the top of the radiator column comes a scalar wave, and it directs itself into your consciousness. Now it's being uplifted by the laser. And the beauty of it is lasers aren't that expensive. We have lasers from a few milliwatts to several watts available. You've got them in any color you can name now. And a lot of them are multicolored lasers that you could separate them with different prisms and different. We use oftentimes a Mac Earl in our own light show to pull 5 different colors out of an argon laser. You can get krypton lasers. There's a whole multitude of different types of lasers that are available now to work with our systems. In addition to using the laser itself, we also like to coordinate the laser with sound. And of course, we've got many different sound tapes. Even the meditation tape that you listened to so far could be used with lasers. And we have another tape that's going to be available with this series too, with no words on it at all, to go with that meditation tape. But one of the things we have is a scanner that we sell. The scanner we make available to people. You hook your laser into the scanner, and then the scanner has a series of dials on it that allow it to be programmed so that the laser is automatically shining out in a floral pattern or a chakra pattern. And the scanner will allow you to position the laser like on different chakra areas of the body. And with this laser in place, what happens is you can scan up and down the body, and you can synchronize the scanner because it has 2 audio inputs as well. You can synchronize it with your stereo, your left and right channel, so that while you're listening to your uplifting interdimensional music, you can have your interdimensional light source coordinated with that. And so the scanner is very helpful. Those of you that want to have some further fun, we also recommend that you take an ordinary loudspeaker and glue a mirror into the cone part of it and hook this loudspeaker to your stereo system and direct the light beam of the laser down into the mirror that's in the cone of the speaker. Of course, this will coordinate the mirror and the light frequencies of the laser to the sound frequencies, and then you can point the output of the laser light from the speaker into the base of your radiators where your crystals are, and they will be synchronized accordingly to types of music you have. This is what I call the low budget scanner, if you don't want to put out the money to buy a scanner. But the scanners are not that important. I mean, that expensive. Now, the other thing is that we have other scanners that are available that are substantially, but they are connected to computers. And they are, you could even write your name, for example, with a laser there. These are for more sophisticated systems. Also, we are developing ways of connecting a Macintosh, IBM, or an Apple computer to the base of the irradiators now to program the systems that way, too. This technology is being developed over in Germany, as it is being developed here also. So we have a lot of different accessory things to go with the light outputs. Oftentimes, I'll tell people that one small laser with a couple of well-placed mirrors can light can give you a tremendous amount of or a tremendous effect of this energy. For example, if you have like a, three or four rooms connected with one laser, where you have the mirror laser output going into one mirror, say the farthest optical distance away, say maybe 25 feet, and a mirror positioned there, and you can buy small mirrors and break them up if you want. Or just small cosmetic mirrors, and they can be glued on the wall with hot glue or whatever. Then you have that laser hitting the first mirror and going down to the second mirror, which might be another 25 feet away in another direction, and then to a third and fourth and fifth mirror. Pretty soon, one laser beam is directed maybe 15 different places. And the effect of this, of course, is to open up the astral energies throughout the entire house or building that you're in at a very economical rate. And at night, when this system is activated and maybe even modulated with a little sound through a scanner, it produces a phenomenal overall area response. I'm going to read a little bit out of our systems catalog here, and I'm going to make a few comments as I go. But basically, I guess you could say our systems are in probably four categories. The first category being cleansing systems, things like the ion shower. The second category, and the meditation system, consisting of the pyramid and the sleeping system. Second category would be the self-help system, which I'm going to get into from the catalog a little bit now. Third category would be what I would call a consciousness-changing system, which would be a quad system or a systems three, where you could go and program events to happen or not to happen and get into things like levitation, these kinds of things. And then the fourth category of system, which is the systems that build the telepathic abilities, the ET communication systems, and the beacon system that involves the thing called the Firestar, which we'll get into in a little while. Anyway, it says in the, we're looking at the Paradigm Systems Catalog, and those of you that end up buying one of these or getting one at the show or one of our seminars, we apologize for the condition of a lot of our literature. We're in a process of upgrading everything we've got. Our literature hasn't had a major upgrade since about 1980, and that's 10 years ago. So we've been so busy with development, we've let our literature slide a little bit. But now we're completely going through everything and making it first class. But so if you have questions, you can always call into the home office. Anyway, it says systems such as ours have been used for millenniums on this planet as well as others. There has been a large amount of evidence gathered from underwater findings in both the Atlantic and Pacific Oceans. In his book, Atlantis, the Eighth Continent, explorer and writer Charles Berlitz goes into great detail about the civilizations of Lemuria and its follower, Atlantis. One of the pyramids in the Pacific near Bimini still emits a green glow that was seen back as far as World War II by pilots on bombing missions to Dachau. The famous Stonehenge in Glastonbury, England, has 12 tall columns and are aligned basically and resemble our Pyridine radiators. I remember with the pyramid in under the water off the coast of Bimini there, they went down with 19 mini submarines and they found that there was a large purple-violet glow still emanating from the base of this pyramid. It's even there today. Kind of blowing out the world because a lot of people didn't believe it was there but had gone down on their own expeditions and verified the result. The technology we are currently leaders in started gaining popularity in America in 1947 when the U.S. Navy began prop control experiments in Norfolk, Virginia. From the Homeotronic Labs in the Cumberland Valley came the famous T-Gamma Hieronymus and U.S. patent number 2,482,773 in 1948, which I mentioned a little while ago. This was a patent on the transmission of electric energy. As time went on, and other names such as radiesthesia, psionic, and bioplasmic, radionic and etheric energies became quite popular both in scientific and metaphysical circles. scale waves became the medium that these phenomena present themselves to the universe from the respective transmitters. Scale waves travel at the speed of thought, which is, of course, instantaneous. The unique thing about the scalar wave is that the moment the positive component is properly generated, the negative component is received from the target source. Moving in a geometric form known as a trapezoid, they oscillate from the Earth's resonant frequencies to speeds well beyond that of light. Their targets are always in the subatomic spectrum to the nuclei of the atoms of the objects targeted, or in the case of the human and animal targets, they directly affect the neuronic synapses in their respective brains. They have been used to shorten and lengthen the lives of all living targets. They can move objects in and out of a person's possession. They can change the weather or start or stop earthquakes. The greater the focus, the greater the result. The chants of the American Indians, followed by the focus of the medicine wheel, could be used as a rudimentary example of scalar wave transmission. The following examples of systems represent the finest offered anywhere. They are affordable and can be built upon step by step. Most people start with a basic system and build upon it as they see and experience direct tangible results. Some people are clever enough to program their basic systems for a larger one. The systems that I show in this catalog are very basic. There are many options that we don't show. And of course, you can always, and the audio tape series here is helping a lot. The very basic system it starts out with basic components, which I'll explain here. Okay, the first thing that's required, of course, is to get rid of the negative energy that the system is going to attract, or the opposite reaction. So that's what the star orb is for, which I explained a little earlier. It's used to negate all negative energies from the system that the system will receive. This unit is connected by a wire provided through a water pipe or a metal stake driven deeply into the ground. Whenever you wish to make a wish or generate positive energy towards a goal, you will meet resistance. Since resistance is electrical in nature, it can be rectified by the antenna configuration of the star orb. Then when there is no resistance, then the rest of the system can perform. The next thing we're going to show, we show in the drawings here, are the radiator and meg orb used to transmit and receive all messages, instructions, and intelligence via the scalar waves. The base of the radiator and the meg orb is always oriented towards the Earth's magnetic north. I also want to say something about this scalar wave thing, something passed across my mind. A few people have tried to duplicate our systems out there because of the results we've got, and I want to say that these people do not know what they're doing. Sometimes I wish they did, but they don't. They use the wrong materials, the wrong plating processes, and the wrong angles in their pyramids themselves. I don't have any adversity to competition that's real, even though that a lot of our things are copyrighted and patented under our own names, but I totally detest rip-off people, and there's plenty of them in the New Age movement, people that claim to have invented things that they haven't, or they're copying things that have no working knowledge of what they're doing, and this only makes it harder for the people that are really trying to move ahead. So anyway, getting on here now, we have the Tesla negative ion pulse power supply is another component of the system. It's used to raise the orbital velocity of the soft electrons within the orb structures and the minerals placed within them. We use a master crystal and driver crystal, and these are used to connect thought forms within the human mind directly via the Akashic records into the transmitting and receiving equipment. And of course, we have the local minerals gathered from the surrounding area of the system to allow the interfacing and link up of the local magnetic fields. In some kinds of programming, a link-up is established also with the local nature spirits. And we have a plastic insulator plate. Electronically insulates the transmitter from the Earth's grounding at the radiator meg orb column. Then we use the orb capstone and large pyramid. These are used to provide a stress, radiation, and interruption-free environment for programming and receiving instructions. Then we have a lead glass director crystal, a quartz data entry crystal used to load the system. And once you get your system set up, you lay down, the best thing to do is lay down underneath the pyramid, directly under the data entry and director crystals, which are suspended above you in the under the capstone of the orb and directly over the capstone of the orb is held in place by the orb itself. And you are laying directly below the temple crystal underneath the system. And once you get underneath the system and you lay there, what happens is you place the lead glass crystal on your forehead, which is called the temple crystal, and begin to meditate on your wish or thought form that you want to load into the system. Now, the reason that we use lead at this point is most people have tremendous amounts of lead in their body, and for this kind of an experience, we find that lead seems to work the best because you'll sense it. And what you do is you start to meditate on what you want to or release or concentrate on, but don't force it, just relax with the thought of this wish that you want. And you should have prepared to make the wish before you make it, and or the affirmation, whatever you're doing, and I'll get into that in a little bit. But I just wanted to say basically what's happening here now. And when the system starts to work, you'll feel a pulsating going on at your forehead, at the brow level, because this temple crystal is placed right on the base of the bridge of the nose where it touches the forehead and balanced there. You'll feel a pulsing going on there, and when the pulsing gets real intense, and that means the system is loading up and you're getting feedback from the master crystal and the driver crystal. That's a feedback system that establishes itself with scalar waves and thought forms. The thought forms respond to scalar waves to the point where you'll actually feel the pulsating. When the system has loaded up the message, what happens is the temple crystal will then fall off of the forehead under the covers next to it. If you're laying on the bed, if you're laying on the floor, it'll fall over on the floor. It won't hurt it when it's falling a couple inches. But it's quite an experience to have this actually happen, and it's all happening on itself. A lot of people are amazed when the pulsating happens. Now, some people can get in the system and feel it right away, meaning that the pulsing sensation will start for them instantly and the crystal will roll off their head. Other people will take a half an hour before the phenomenon starts. Some people it takes 2 or 3 hours. Other people can do it in 15 seconds. It depends on your conditioning. And don't be discouraged if it doesn't happen for you the first time around. It will happen. It always does. It just takes a little practice. Mainly the practice is to learn how to relax, because once you relax, the system is automatic. Now, some of the things that you can do at this point when you're loading the system up is you could put, for example, a book in it and program to read the book, or you could put a cassette in it and listen to the words on the cassette subconsciously. And these kinds of things I would imagine that you would do before you go to bed. Now, we have to take into consideration the moon cycles for programming. When you start getting into programming for outside events, you only program during the new moon period, which is about approximately 2.5 weeks of the month. The full moon period, which is the other 2.5 weeks of the month, is a very powerful period of agitation on the astral plane. And any kind of energy that's going to block you will be prevalent on the surface of the earth and in the ether. So you don't want to program or even work with your system that much as far as trying to influence outside events or others during the full moon period, because you'll only meet with blockage and it's just a draining energy experience. So you leave the system alone and it will work its way through these obstacles automatically. Then during the new moon period, you can then reprogram and get down and start pushing it again for accomplishments of what you want. Now, if you were going to do a self-help type of program system we just mentioned, what you do is you wouldn't have to align the pyramid to the magnetic north, because it's going to have a gold capstone on it. But it would be necessary to align the bottom part of the meg orb to the magnetic north. And this can be done with a small compass. And what you do is you align one side of it so that the meg orb has 4 octahedrons on it. So they're in pairs of 2 and 2 and 2. So you align one wall of octahedrons to the magnetic north, along with the insulating plate and the crystals, of course, that are... After you find that you've aligned this to the north, that the irradiator is not facing you as you lay in the pyramid, then what you want to do is swivel the irradiator on the top of the meg orb and get it directly into position facing you inside the pyramid. And once you've got it facing you, what I use is a little duct tape or some scotch tape or masking tape to tape it down so it doesn't fall off, because it's designed to swivel on the top of the meg orb, but it still has to be secured. Sometimes I use these little wire things that come with garbage bags, the little tie down, then you can position it somewhere else. If you want to say, for example, go into the opposite mode of this programming phase and program away from you. Like, for example, somebody wanted to program for a new car or something like that. What you're going to do is you're going to aim it basically in the direction of what your object is. And then I usually tell people, for the example of a car, is to go get some part of that car and put it in the system, because that's like the similar. And that means that you want something of some material, like pieces of carpet or something. One thing, and put it in the radiator, then face the radiator in the direction of the dealership, wherever this car is that you want. And this could be done for anything. This could be done for healing. You put a piece of the sick person's hair into the system. Now, whatever you do, and face it in their direction. Now, one of the things that I want to emphasize here is when you do programming, even if you're married or you're doing brother and sister or father and son or mother, daughter, or whatever, you don't tell the other person about what your program is. And you can write it down. You do your affirmation by handwriting, put it in a sealed envelope, put it in the system. More than one person could use the system simultaneously. The system will handle as many messages as you want it to. But it's necessary that one person doesn't know what the other person's messages are, because as soon as you tell one person what you're doing, whether they encourage you to have this program come true or not, it interferes with the energy field, because it has to be a one-on-one field with you and the system. The scalar wave is a very temperamental energy, and the human race is not quite yet ready for joint programming, meaning that you and two or three others would share a program. It's all right to network a system for a joint cause, but not for individual programming requirements. In other words, if you're networking a system, you're working with a group, and you're saying to the group, what we want to do is we want to heal this planet. We're going to send out healing energy to the planet. Maybe we want to work on the environment, some of these oil spills. We want to send some healing energy out to the animals affected. What you would do then is you would individually, without telling the other person how you programmed it, program your system. But you could have commonality conversation, saying that, yes, my system is part of the group, and we're all working together to get this common goal accomplished. That's the type of thing that I'm talking about here.
Well, the type of thing I'm talking about here is we're out of time. So this will be continued next Friday, which I think is somewhere around the 17th or so. Actually, 17th, 18th, 19th, somewhere in there. Anyway, we'll catch you tomorrow night. We'll have a great time. Thank you very much for listening to the best listened show on the Internet, Dr. Fred Bell's Health Science and Energy Show. Boom.